The geography of furry conventions. How we can make getting to our conventions easier for everyone. This is part 2 of my furry convention commentary, in relation to geography, and also demographics, and statistics. I don't know if you need to read part 1 in order to understand this part, but perhaps it might help if you did to gain greater context of my perspective. I'm not too sure. I also apologize to whoever's editing this about the lack of images, for I do not know what to add here. Introduction. Furry conventions are hard to run. They require staff, a menu, and so many other complicated things that are often hard to get together and organize. One aspect that isn't brought up enough when it comes to conventions is not one that many organizers necessarily need to worry about. Transportation. Perhaps the most prohibitively expensive barrier to someone attending a convention, besides the hotel cost, is transportation. This is partially because cars are the most common, and often most convenient, way to get around in the United States and Canada. I would argue that due to the sheer dominance of the car in these countries, it is hard for a lot of people, both within the countries and outside of them, to realize just how disadvantageous cars can be on both an individual and societal level. I won't focus a lot on the societal level, but I will focus on the individual level for some time to show you why I care so much about transit, even in a furry context. I will also talk about how it relates to poverty and what we can do about it. I will talk about cars first, however. The problem with cars. I will point out that cars require a great amount of attention to operate. You need to pay attention to obstacles in the road, other drivers, pedestrians, traffic lights, and many other things that you can simply let someone else pay attention to on a bus or train. Cars also, arguably, require more attention than bikes do. It's a lot easier to kill someone with a car than a bike. Unfortunately, there are many drivers on the road that simply aren't paying attention. According to an Allstate study and PRN Newswire, 35% of drivers and 63% of drivers aged 16-29 have sent a text message while texting, and according to that same study, 15% admitted to driving while drunk. I don't think that this is necessarily the blame of 35% or 15% of drivers, however, as America is a ridiculously car-centric country. Since so much of our infrastructure is based around driving one's car to get pretty much anywhere, bars are often inaccessible to anyone other than car. This can result in compromises like having to pick a designated driver, and it can also result in some people deciding that simply driving themselves home, despite the many risks, is worth it. Compare this to public transportation, where using your cell phone is practically encouraged, and being drunk is commonly accepted, especially during the late hours of the night. Now, consider the simple capacity of public transportation versus a car. According to the Federal Highway Administration, a car on average carries 1.7 people. This means that a lot of trips are done by an individual, or two people, and that carpooling is rare. Compare this to a bus's 5.1 people per vehicle, in Dallas, Texas. It's 10.3 in Houston, and 13.9 in Los Angeles. Even at the worst example I could find in the document, it's significantly better than cars on average. This intuitively makes sense. Buses are literally designed in their routes to carry multiple people doing multiple trips at once. This may seem like a societal benefit, but it can still be an individual benefit as well. Transit can transport more people with less space, as even though theoretically cars can carry up to 5 people, it's rarely ever used to its full capacity. Thus, if a city was built around transit rather than around cars, it can easily be reasoned that less people would experience traffic. Sure, traffic would still definitely exist, but there would be less people on the roads, and instead looking at their phones, listening to music, without multitasking, or simply vibing. I can't guarantee that more transit will reduce traffic, but perhaps you wouldn't have to sit through that traffic, and can instead enjoy a train in this scenario. Finally, cars are disgustingly expensive, more than many people realize. It's not just the upfront cost of buying a used, about $35,000 on average, or even brand new car, which is more, it's also about other sudden costs. Maintenance, insurance, gas, and even subtle costs, such as the fee at the DMV all contribute to the average cost of owning a vehicle, which is almost $1,000 according to Credit Karma. For those that aren't at or below the poverty line, RTD's month pass, one of the most expensive in the nation, is $200. That's a whopping $800 saved. If one doesn't like the bus, then the bike is also really nice, and although the upfront cost of a bike can be a bit of a challenge, the other costs associated with a bike are much more affordable than a car. One can spend this money on anything that is not a car, including, as an example, a fursuit. Even a kimono fursuit. Of course, as for those who are at or below the poverty line, well, monthly income for someone at the poverty line is a bit less than $1,200. This is from a single adult, who would make $14,097 per year, taken from the US Census. This is relevant, because for those who are in this situation, one would still need to worry about things like food, rent, and much more. It's simple to see that a car is a great expense for them. A better world exists in Europe. It's easy to see how transit can be advantageous to an individual, but it may seem impossible to see it carried through. I want to point out an example that already exists, Europe. Andorra is a small island nation located between Spain and France with a population of about 75,000 people, and there is a lack of rail transit to this country, keyword, rail transit. Similarly, Flagstaff in Arizona has a population of about that much, and lacks rail transit to Phoenix, though Flagstaff does have a daily train on Amtrak via the Southwest Chief. A journey from Andorra La Vieja, the main town in Andorra, to Barcelona is about 2.5 hours by car, adding 15 or more minutes depending on traffic, and if one wants to avoid tolls. This covers a distance of at least 197 km, or about 123 miles. A drive from Flagstaff to Phoenix is about 2 hours and 15 minutes, where tolls are irrelevant or non-existent and traffic is mostly a concern once one is in the Phoenix metro area. This covers a distance of 145 miles, or 234 km. The Phoenix metro area has a population of about 4.9 million people, whereas Barcelona has a metro population, including the suburbs, of 5.5 million people. Thus, it's probable that these two journeys by bus should have very similar demand by bus. Let's look at how many buses serve these two routes, starting with the one in the US. Flagstaff to Phoenix has three main options: Greyhound, Flixbus, a recent addition, and Broom Transportation, which also operates the Amtrak Thruway bus service. Greyhound provides two buses per day, Flixbus two as well, and not every day, and Broom does one via Amtrak Thruway, but you have to also book a train in order to use it. You can also book a private, individual shuttle from Flagstaff to Phoenix, but I don't exactly think that a private, non-scheduled bus exactly counts as something useful. This is a total of about 5 buses per day that serve this route. Now, let's take a look to Europe. Flixbus alone has an astounding 8 buses per day between Andorra La Vieja and Barcelona. Don't like the awful, cheap service of Flixbus? Okay, that's fine, there's also ALSA, which has 10 buses per day that do that trip. I don't even know if these are all of the companies or agencies that operate this route. With the combination of just these two buses per day, you get 18 buses per day. This isn't even including the Airport Express from Andorra that Flixbus operates to Barcelona's airport, by the way. 18 buses is very obviously better than a measly 5, more than 3 times better, in fact. I'm not even talking about when there is an option to take the train in these areas, where it's often not only faster than driving, but also competitive with flying, depending on the distance and route you're talking about. Now, it is true that the US is significantly more car-dependent than the European Union and UK both are, meaning that the people who are going from Flagstaff to Phoenix likely already have cars, thus they have a means to go from Flagstaff to Phoenix without using a bus. I don't think that this is a justifiable excuse for how awful American intercity bus service is in terms of frequency, though. There are many use cases for using a bus versus a car. For example, the stop that is served in Phoenix on Flixbus isn't in downtown Phoenix, it's at the airport. It's very easy to see a use case where someone takes a bus to a big international airport in order to travel somewhere, both for business and pleasure. In fact, this is exactly what American Airlines is doing in order to replace some of their shorter flights to Philadelphia's airport, which is a hub for American. It's also true that there are many potential public transit trips that simply don't exist in the US because of the presence of the car. Allentown, Pennsylvania has more than 800,000 people in its metro area and is about a 2.5 without tolls hour drive away from New York City. In a European country like France or Germany, an intercity rail line would exist between these two places. However, this is the US, so an intercity train route simply doesn't exist. There are only buses. I'm willing to bet that there aren't as many buses as there is demand, as having to drive to New York City is an awful, awful idea. Public transit is nearly always cheaper than individual automobile transportation, meaning that for a lot of people it's simply a better idea to go to a venue without having to worry about parking, gas, navigation, or many other things by simply taking a train or bus. This is very possible in Europe, even when the venue location isn't ideal. Eurofiorence is essentially located in an industrial area, where passenger travel is not necessarily in demand. However, it is still within a 5-minute walk to the nearest S-Bahn station, which can allow you to connect with many other places in Berlin, and via DB, outside of Berlin. If you don't want to use a train, for some reason, there are 3 local bus routes nearby, one of which runs at least every 8 minutes from what I'm seeing easily on Google Maps. I checked at 3 p.m. in Mountain Time on Google Maps, so it's close to midnight over in Germany. Compare this to further confusion in San Jose, California, which is plainly located in the center of a major American city, though not as major as San Francisco. In all truth, its nearby transit is as good as the nearby transit to Eurofiorence, but there's a key point missing here. I just said that an industrial, outer part of Berlin has as good of transit connections as the middle of an American downtown. Imagine how much better the transit must be in the middle of Berlin, and how much better the experience is if a furry con were located close to the center of a European city. Actually, I don't have to imagine that latter part, as there's another furry convention in Europe that has possibly the best location for a furry convention in the world, at least in terms of transit availability. Nordic Fuzzcon, located about 5 minutes to Malmo's main train station, has plenty of restaurants nearby, is very accessible, and even has a great amount of venue space. Oh, and that's 5 minutes, walking. You have access to trains in Denmark, most notably Copenhagen's airport, trains to other parts of Sweden, and even a train, or two to Norway. I don't know how many trains there are, in all honesty, I just know that international rail links in Europe is not ideal, and not good. This is very much an expensive venue, given its central and incredibly convenient location, but in my honest opinion it is well worth it. It could easily add to the experience of the convention for one to not drive to the venue, especially in a traffic-choked central European city, such as Malmo. I understand it's not usually described as such, but this is comparison to a lot of the US. There's also a possibility of greater capacity and lowered costs, as although Scandinavia is incredibly expensive, one way to reduce the costs of traveling there is to not use a car. This isn't always ideal in the rural north, but in the more urban south it's obvious, and especially possible. Thus, it is sad that we don't often see this same level of transit availability in the US and Canada. It exists in parts, such as in New York or San Francisco, but the reality is that those places are obscenely expensive to have a convention, and really to do much of anything. It's also sad that walking and biking, which are other alternatives to driving, are similarly neglected in this country. I think that, if we were more accepting of these other transportation modes, especially transit, in our country, it would be a far better place to live for everyone. The monetary costs involved. Of course, it may seem like that all of this talk has little to do with furry conventions, to which I would say, let me finish please, I'm not done yet. Now, furry conventions likely can't do very much about their locations, but similar to how cars are obscenely expensive in the US, furry conventions are expensive too. This isn't by any means new information, but I still think it's worth underlining just how expensive a con can become. I'm going to calculate my would-be budget for Denver, my local convention that is by far the easiest and cheapest one for me to go to. Thus, I'll try to keep things as cheap as reasonably possible, while still being somewhat realistic. I'll need to worry about 4 main things when going to this convention: transportation, food, the cost of the convention itself, and more optional costs, such as merchandise. The dates of Denver, for reference, are from the 18th to the 20th in August of 2023, though I'm including the 17th as well. The first and most obvious cost is attending the convention, which will set me back $75. Next is transportation. A regional 3-hour fare on RTD, Denver's transit agency, basically, costs $5.25, which is still cheaper than getting a taxi that same distance. However, there's some limitations here, besides with speed. For example, what if I wanted to stay up late in a room party, or in the night dance that many furry conventions provide? Well, RTD does not run 24/7, so I'd either have to stay in a hotel overnight, which would set me back by RLOT, or I would have to take an Uber back. Per night, I counted 4, since the 17th is pre-registration day basically, I'd have to pay about $30 per Uber ride back home. This is because there's an upcharge late at night, when there's significantly more demand. Adding these together brings $35.25 per day, or $141.00 total. This would go down if I went home via public transit and decided to come home earlier, but I would have to give up some late night events. Then there's food, which in my opinion can be hard to calculate for sometimes. McDonald's is likely the cheapest nearby option, though it still costs about $1.15 for a Big Mac combo meal. It's more expensive than other locations, as it's in the 16th Street Mall, where there's significantly more foot traffic, and also significantly more expensive prices for sustaining a location there. Thus, I'll plan to eat breakfast at home, just a bowl of cereal, or something lol. This will set me back about $1.33 per day, $3 for the cereal, which isn't this expensive admittedly, but there will be other food associated costs of McDonald's isn't enough. Even with this cheap option, I'm probably looking at $118 total. I originally had $132, but I removed $14, because I likely won't eat both lunch and dinner on the 17th. I'll still have to worry about things at the convention, such as t-shirts from artists, and potentially other things, so I'll be vague and add $100. I'd likely spend more than this, but I think that my extra cereal associated costs will cover the extra, maybe. This totals to $434, at pretty much the very minimum. This price inevitably goes up if I make other decisions, such as booking a hotel room, or if I'm from elsewhere in Colorado. If I were to drive directly to the venue, I'd have to worry about gas, parking, and other sudden monetary costs. As said before, going to a furry convention is expensive. Even for me, a white suburbanite, who lives with supportive, good parents. I don't think I have to state that it's harder for those that are in a worse position economically, but I will anyway. There are more than 40 million households/people without children living below the US poverty level, the meaning of which is determined by how many adults and children are in a given household. For couples without children, the poverty level is $18,145, for single adults, it's $14,097, as said earlier. I'll look at single adults, as although the fandom is quite old, and per the history, the majority of furries still don't have children, both by choice and economic circumstance. $14,097 divided by 12, so monthly income, is a bit less than $1,200 per month. Now, according to Ernest, the average rent in the US is $1,249 per month. This doesn't consider which state or city you're in, although the blog post goes into more details, but I don't think that's necessary. I only mentioned rent, I haven't even begun to talk about utilities, food, transportation, and even sneaky costs on the poor, such as loan interest that are infectious and toxic in the US. I also forgot to mention that non-white people like Black, Hispanic, and Asian people are often far more heavily affected by poverty than white people are. This means that many costs that many richer people, like myself, often take for granted are simply unfeasible for millions of people in the nation. Also, don't get cocky, Europeans. You have huge problems with poverty too. Thus, it would make sense that there are many furries in the fandom that simply aren't able to go to a convention. I don't think it's the majority, as most Americans are still above the poverty line, but it's a figure that exists. As someone who's had the opportunity to go to both Denver, which I admittedly hated at the time, and Confura this year, I fully understand the appeal behind furry conventions. It's an opportunity to get together and do nerdy things, for one. For another, many people see friends at these conventions, from both nearby and far away, and it offers a great opportunity for otherwise online interactions to turn into in-person interactions. This is absolutely amazing and cool, and it's something that I think more people should be able to experience. I don't think that a bigger convention is necessarily better than a smaller convention, but I do think that those who are otherwise unable to go to any furry convention, small or otherwise, should have the opportunity to go. It's understandable that conventions aren't for everyone, but an opportunity to be surrounded by people who also enjoy this weird, niche, sometimes sexual thing is something that's incredibly refreshing and good. It's especially good for those who are part of the LGBT community, who often are more likely to suffer from family abandonment and poverty. Therefore, making an effort to improve access to furry conventions is a good thing, either by helping smaller conventions get off the ground, especially in smaller areas, or by helping poorer furries get access to bigger conventions. In general, though, I believe that transportation will play a key role in how we can do this most effectively. What to do about transportation? I believe that there are two main ways we can improve the transit accessibility of furry conventions, but I'm going to save the second one for a bit later. The first is simply choosing a good venue with good transit access. My original idea for this article/essay was to go through a lot of furry conventions one by one to show how inadequate, or potentially adequate, public transportation is to them, hence my language used in the first part. However, I can summarize it by saying that there are three main types of conventions: downtown conventions, airport conventions, and suburban conventions. Anthrocon is a weird example of a downtown convention, because it doesn't have good access to its airport, nor to other parts of the country within about 500 miles, but transit to downtown from other parts of Pittsburgh is actually quite reasonable. Not perfect, but much better than somewhere like Boise, Idaho. Then there's airport conventions, which I'm not familiar with, but are likely flawed in terms of transportation, as according to Google Maps it's hard to access hotels close to the airport versus the airport itself. A great example is Midwest Fur Fest. Finally, there are suburban conventions, which, well, a really good example is actually the abomination that is Free Fur All. If you look at Denver's website, it partially describes the main way to go from the airport in Denver to downtown, where the convention center is located. If you're trying to look for the same thing with Free Fur All, well, you'll get a boast about how there's free parking. It's not like there's any public transit options, of course, not even a bus, but it's still emblematic of what happens when you don't care about your menu other than whether it's convenient for cars instead of your guests. I don't think that suburban conventions are necessarily bad for transit availability, rather it's America that's bad for transit availability. I do think that, if one were to look at where to put a convention, transit options should be closer to the top of their mind. It doesn't have to be perfect, as America is far from it, but even just one bus line that comes every 30 minutes is better than whatever Free Fur All thinks it's doing. The second option is a lot more radical. It is to provide the transportation ourselves, or rather, for the convention to do it. It's very possible to hire a shuttle bus company, or even straight up a bus company to provide transportation from one place to another. If the hotel isn't already involved in providing transportation, or only provides it from the airport for example, then it's incredibly possible to hire more buses to do more trips. This can also fill the gap in the event of the many late night events provided at furry conventions. If a transit network doesn't run 24/7, like RTD for example, then buses can be used as a more efficient way of bringing people home, or at least part of the way home. It can also be simply done before and after a convention for those that paid for a room. Perhaps, for those harder to reach suburban conventions, or even for furries in more rural areas, it'd be a great option to take a bus that leaves after the convention is done rather than the day after a convention is done, or longer. At least in the short term, furries can fill in the gaps given to us by society at large. Conclusion. However, there's a big problem with this line of thinking: money. It's simply quite expensive and difficult to fund and organize a furry convention in the first place, as many would attest to. It explains a lot about why furry conventions act the way they do. A reason why many furry conventions, especially in suburban areas, don't seem to care about transit is because they are far more worried about more pressing concerns. It explains why so many furries have to book rooms together in order to go to a furry convention, and why they may also do road trips together to those conventions. It explains why so many are unable to go to a convention in the first place, and why furries that are able to attend multiple conventions are able to do so, that is, they have more money. Money is a common thread linking these together, just as it links our economy and ourselves, unfortunately. This is entirely understandable, and I do not fault furries for falling into the common traps of car culture, nor do I fault them for having conventions in hard-to-reach places. In fact, I'm much angrier at those in the past who decided to embrace cars rather than implement them carefully. I do think, however, that there are things that furries can do to mitigate the many expenses of a furry convention, especially in regards to transportation. Due to the sheer cost of cars, and due to the lackluster experience of them, I also think that focusing more on public transportation is a good idea. I don't know the best way that we can improve public transportation in the US such that it's easier for our fellow furries to go to conventions. Perhaps starting a charity, whose goal it is to help poorer furries go to conventions, may be worth it, and perhaps I would be the one making that charity. But, I think that I would be fine with paying a little bit of extra money for admission in order for others to go to the convention. After all, it's not exactly the menu that makes a convention great, it's the people, and forcing them to drive is inhibitory and annoying. So, let's give them an option to take the bus instead. Or, at the very least, make the bus better to conventions.